feel it, I won't conceal it. They can't control me, I'm well fine. I pay my own way, I earn the whole way. I'm worth the whole bay, you can't deny. Diamonds, emerald, my face, I must be happy. Crystal clear raindrops won't dry my precious eye.
Gary Beals, Blood Red Roses. Man, that's real good. That's real good. Hey, welcome everyone. This is the Soul Savage Show. Hey, with Q Lynn and EV.
Hey, what's going on?
Man, that's a nice jam.
Wait, ain't it smooth?
I love it, man.
Right there.
That's the first time I heard that.
I tell y'all, yeah, I tell y'all all the time, it's three elements that make a great song. The quality of the lyrics, the instrumentation, and the vocal ability. And when I tell you our guest that's on the line right now, our special guest, he's a phenomenal singer, as you can tell. If you can't tell by that song, great singer, songwriter, was a runner-up on a Canadian Idol. He won many, nominated for many awards. I just want to give it up right now for our guest, Mr. Gary Beals. How are you doing tonight?
So glad to be talking to both of you guys.
Hello? Listen, I'm so glad that you're on. Yeah, you're on, man. You're on. You're on.
Oh, okay.
You're all right. Good. We got you. We hear you.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us on Soul Savage Radio. It's a pleasure to have you on. How are you doing?
You know, I'm doing so well. The album is coming out tomorrow, and I'm so excited.
Yes.
I feel like a kid on, you know, on Christmas Eve. Yeah.
I'm in good spirits. Yes, that's good to hear. And we get straight to it on this show. We get all of the musical conversation, music nerd show. That's what I call it. That's what I'm gonna call it now, because we get all into the artistic side of the
all
music.
Right.
And so I want to
like
start
that.
This off. Yes, and I'm familiar with your upbringing it's quite similar to mine. That's why I think I'm so drawn to your voice, because I can pull from certain things you said in terms of your influences, like Otis Redding. You pull from a lot of classic soul artists, and I could feel that the first time I heard one of your songs. And I'm gonna get into that a little bit later with one of my questions, but get into your upbringing. What is there any artist in particular whose vocal style that you were drawn to?
When I was growing up?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, I'm a real lover of like classic soul, because my parents, they played a lot of those artists. So I would say Otis Redding. Definitely, I was so drawn to his music, to his singing. Al Green, I love me some Sam Cooke, Whitney Houston, because she has that voice. I would say Aretha Franklin. So those were the artists. I mean, Boyz II Men too as well. Those were the artists and the groups that I grew up listening to and just loving. That's what kind of made me fall in love with music.
Yes, and I know you've been singing, like, pretty much all your life since you were a child, grew up singing in church. I pull from that experience as well. I'm a professional musician, and I've kind of grown my skills in the church, and I think always tie I have other things. I ain't been to church in I don't know how long, but that's another story. But
you and yourself.
Right, pulling from the spiritual side of it, it taught me so much in terms of the repetitiveness, the improv of what gospel brings to music, because of that. You know, it kind of is indicative of how you perform live, like if you're doing like a gig at a venue. It's sort of that when you sing it, I guess, in that, or a musician, you're kind of pulling from that same atmosphere because it's sort of improv, and I kind of see that side of it. With your voices as well, in terms of the, do you think in terms of the musical discipline church brings to certain, most great singers have a gospel background? Do you think the repetitiveness of singing so many songs in church and, you know, that whole thing, you know, choir rehearsals, you know, endless choir rehearsals, some people paying attention, some not, but that's the whole thing. But do you think that kind of musical discipline helped you vocally?
Yeah, I mean, most definitely for me. I mean, growing up in the church, singing in the choir and, you know, attending choir rehearsals. Attending choir rehearsals like weekly and, you know, having to learn the parts. And, well, at that time I was teaching the parts, the alto, soprano, and the tenor. And, yeah, I mean, even the spontaneity of singing in church and, you know, having to, you know, flow with the spirit, sort of thing. I mean, that's been very influential as well. And, you know, I'm a type of singer. I always say I'm a feel type of singer. Like, I have to feel the music. If I don't feel the music, then it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel authentic to me. And even performing live, like when I perform live, it's, you know, I mean, we rehearse, obviously, but it's just, yeah, I mean, I feed off of energy and feed off of the crowd and just feed off of the vibe. And so church has been very influential for me growing up in church in terms of, you know, how I maneuver about and, you know, how I perform and just the, you know, a lot of the learnings that I kind of grasped onto.
That you painted such a perfect picture of like the church experience with live experience, because it's like a call and response thing. Because sometimes those same people you'll see, like it's like a duality of their life. Like one night they party and then the next night it's the same crowd. Sometimes certain venues they call out to you like sing that song, like they just up at you or play that. Like it's sort of the same experience. Depending on the size of the crowd, and I love that. I think that's I know people refer to it as a high, but I think it's just like an adrenaline rush. I don't know what it is. It's just a burst of energy, but you described that so well, because that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and I mean, even just Right, and even just performing in church, you know, I remember just performing in church and or singing in church, and, you know, people in the audience, you know, they would say certain things like, amen, or sing a brother, or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of just encouragement for you to kind of just even give it even more.
Right.
You know, and just growing up for me, I was always like, you know, just ministering in church, and I always wanted to at least bless one person before I would sing. I would always say, you know what, God, if you can use me to bless at least one person, then please do that. You know, allow me, use me as a vessel. And so even now singing, I mean, it's not gospel music, but it's music. And, you know, I just want the music to inspire people, and I want people to be able to get something from it, from the performance, from the music, from the, you know, from whatever it is that I'm kind of releasing.
Right. And my next question, I guess, in terms of, you know, I know you had a little hiatus in terms of the creative process, in terms, because I'm sure all the process of creating it. I know you had mentioned doing Canadian Idol. Well, first, how did that what gave you the motivation to want to do that show?
Well, first, I'm from this, like, small community in Cherrybrook, Nova Scotia, and first there was American Idol that came out, and we didn't have it over here in Canada, and, you know, I was just excited to see, like, oh, this reality, a first reality singing contest on TV, and, you know, I would be in front of the TV watching every week and just kind of singing along with contestants, and then finally they had announced that, you know, Canadian Idol was coming to Canada. And so I was super excited about that. And a group of my friends, we all sing. We sing together in the choir. So we just decided to go to audition. And, you know, kind of the rest just kind of fell into me becoming the runner-up on that show. It was the first season. So it was a wonderful experience.
I'm just stuck on the runner-up part because I feel like you should have won. But that's just me.
Oh, okay. Blessing. I was good with kind of placing second because I didn't want to, you know, I lasted till the very end, but I also didn't, you know, walk away with that actual title of being the Canadian Idol. You know, I like I said, I lasted until the very end and was very proud of that.
Yeah, you should be. I feel like, you know, sometimes that, I feel like it probably was just was like a stepping stone to, in terms of booking gigs, like more gigs, was that more after the fact?
Most definitely, because before Canadian Idol, I was just performing locally, you know, throughout the communities and the surrounding communities and the church. And then, you know, after I did Idol, Canadian Idol, it, you know, I was performing nationally, sometimes internationally as well. And, you know, I just felt like it was good that I also didn't win because there was so much learning and just so much more growth that I, you know, had to kind of get into, so it was a good, definitely a good stepping stone for me.
You hit on something. You keep segueing perfectly.
All right.
Questions that I had, because I was from that, because a lot of people look at albums as like they take about, you know, 10 minutes, and then you're supposed to package it and market it and have it done within a week. And we all know the creative process. People that are creative know that the process isn't like that. And so, you know, I know that 11-year hiatus was, you like you just said, a learning. I feel like I've had a similar experience, and I couldn't even, I don't know if you feel similar, but I couldn't even call myself a professional musician until I was, like, solid 10 years in. And, it, like, you know, and I spent those years, like, just being, like, studying as much vocal artists and musicians as much as I could, to where I could, like, take it apart, like, the music, understand, like, what connects the musical dots. Like, for instance, Prince, like, what's his inspiration? Okay, we got Jimi Hendrix, we got the Isley Brothers, we got Carlos Santana. It's like you keep following that chain, and, like, with Rick James, it's like Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Thelonious Monk.
Okay.
Like, following that chain, and with D'Angelo, just to make a little modern, his, you know, Prince, and then we get down to Funkadelic, we get down to Ohio Players, we get down to Earth, Wind, and Fire, we got Phil Taylor, you know, we follow that chain, and, I'm just saying, you know, I get on a little tip sometimes, but
I love it,
just the the basis of it, of being a student of music. All those artists were what made those artists who they were and the superstars they were, because they followed that chain of inspiration. And from I see that like clear as day in your music, and it's only a few artists I feel like that do that. So I wanted to know, during that time of learning, your downtime of like just taking it all in, what did you discover about yourself artistically in that time?
Yeah, I mean, I decided to take a break because my last album before the release of this album came out in 2009. And I just felt like, you know, I was just kind of doing music, but there really wasn't any type of purpose or meaning behind it. I was just kind of just going through the emotion sort of thing. And so it was important for me to take a step back and just to discover parts of myself, find out who it is that I am, and kind of find my placement, my lane where I felt like I fit. I also, you know, I had struggled with my sexuality for years. And being a, you know, black individual from a small black community, it really was an internal struggle for me. And then, you know, coming from the gospel world, well, you know, I felt like I didn't kind of fit in that world with, you know, someone struggling with their sexuality. And then in the R&B world, I also felt like I didn't fit there as well. So I, you know, I kind of walked away from music because I felt like, you know, there was no, you know, there was no place for me. And so I really had to step back and just discover parts of myself. I traveled. I, you know, just tapped into things that I, you know, didn't know about myself, things that I didn't like about myself, and just started really embracing those things and just kind of healing and just removing a lot of layers, you know, whether it be societal things that, you know, were taught, or traditional things, or, you know, when it comes to religion and all that stuff. And so I just had to do some just removing and just, like I said, healing. And so I then started performing with a lot of cover bands within the city. So I got back into performing, and it was just the beauty of performing live with a full band. And it was just like, oh my goodness, this is what I love. Like, this is what I yearn. And then it was the importance of me just getting back and also getting creative with, you know, creating my own original material and writing and putting my thoughts to paper. And, you know, I learned a lot creatively, even just, you know, parts of my voice that I didn't really use. Like, you know, before I used to shy away from singing in my falsetto voice. But I really use a lot of that in this album, and just, you know, just learning different things. And the producer I worked with, like, he pulled a lot of, things out of me. So it was great. Yeah. So kind of that's what it is in a nutshell, I guess you could say.
Nice. The Blood Red Roses video, first off, it's amazing.
Thank you.
It's something about artists that can, like, just simply, like, because I feel like storytelling is a lost art form, and specifically in music, but I clearly got from the Blood Red Roses, what it was, I got that if you took a trip, you inspired by your trip in South Africa, and I definitely got that thoughts about the song and the visual art. I wanted to know, well, first, where did you shoot that in Africa?
Well, actually, so I take it you probably watched, because there's the original and then there's the remix.
Yes, the original. Oh. Sorry, I forgot to specify. Blood Red Roses, the original one version.
The original. Okay, so yeah, the original. No, we actually shot that here in Toronto.
Okay.
Yeah, just different parts in the city. We spent the full day just shooting different people, and that's kind of what we captured. And then the remix itself, that video we shot in Toronto as well.
And the subject matter is similar to a songwriter, I don't know if you're privy to her, but Leanne LaHava, she has a song called Green and Gold, and it reminded me that it's not necessarily the same sonic, you know, production-wise, whatever, and not in that way. I mean in terms of just the subject matter, Green and Gold, she's talking about where she was born, or just being inspired by London and a specific town there, and it kind of reminded me of that, and it was just a really great creative, like, it all cohesively made sense.
Thinking.
You know, the song and the visual art, it all made sense. And getting to Me For Me, I know you dropped that some months ago. And that single, I'm telling you, it was just you uttering just the first vocal phrasing, it took me out. I was like, wait. It's like completely, I'm telling you, it's been a while since somebody like vocally pulls me in. And it's, when you mention Whitney as your upbringing, I'm like, that's it. It's like the light bulb. It's, again, the musical dots like made sense because the way she approached songs, as well as Luther Vandross, I add him in there too. Whitney is, I say, like a vocal athlete. I call her an Olympic vocalist because it's something about the way she approached the song. It wasn't rushed. It was inviting. It was the accompaniments of the instrumentation. It was like she was taking in everything musically that was happening. And like you were saying, in terms of like the call and response, like that's what I heard in Me For Me. And it was like, that's what singing is. It's like you're supposed to draw somebody in. And I felt it.
Yes.
And it was like, it's been a long time since like a new artist just like completely. And it was just the first phrase. Like that's some Whitney Luther type shit. You know what
right.
That's
I
mean? That's not regular singing.
I appreciate that because I admire Whitney Houston so much just growing up and watching her perform on TV. I've never ever seen her live. But she would, like you said, she would draw you in. Sometimes I thought I was hypnotized by her singing, just her being able to stand on that stage and just captivate an audience and captivate me watching from a TV screen. And so I was always drawn to how she was able to, just like I said, captivate an audience and just, you know, make you feel the emotion of what she's singing about. And so, I'm appreciative of what you just said. So thank you very much. And, music, you're supposed to feel it. It's supposed to hit the soul of your being. And it's supposed to make you feel so many different emotions. And so that was my goal for this album, you know, not just to feel sad, not just to feel happy, not just to feel, you know, heartbroken, but just to feel an eclecticness of emotions. Because we as people, that's what we, you know, we experience on a day-to-day basis.
Right. And I feel like the acoustic opening, it, like, complements your voice so well. And I love singers that can, because that's what I feel acoustic is meant for, is to bring to life the voice and really center it around. Because, you know, with production, if it's overdone or if it's not, you know what I mean, if it's not right, it can, like, overshadow the vocals, but the acousticness should bring out the rawness of someone's voice. And I feel like, I feel like the acoustic and a singer's voice is like a marriage, and if it's done right, it's like a conversation, like jazz, you know, that like, again, we get back to the call and response. It's all from the same thing, jazz and gospel, so they all pull from each other because you have to have a conversation with the musician has to have a conversation with the singer and for it to go right. And just the opening, like it was just enough. I was like, all right, I'm sold. This is it. This is where I'm at.
Thank you. That's the first song that we wrote on the album. That was the first time with me actually working with the producer, working together creatively, meeting him for the first time. So that's kind of, you know, that's what happened, and it was a beautiful thing. We were really happy. I mean, he was just supposed to do two tracks on the album, and it worked so well with him that he produced the whole album.
Nice. What's your expectations of musicians when you when we used to go outside and perform live? your expectations of musicians in terms of what you're trying to get musically from them for you to be at your best?
To learn the music, you know, for years I used to play with a lot of musicians who they're just looping, you know, and, you know, growing up in the church, sometimes I guess you're just looping and it's a kind of a feel thing. And then, you know, I released like two albums and I would get musicians and, you know, you get together at rehearsal and they are not learning the music at all. And I'm just like, but that's not how my song goes. You need to learn my song the way it's supposed to be played. And so, and I used to hate that because that's another reason why I lost the passion for music. And it's funny because it's like, you know, sometimes if you're not surrounded around the right people, you can really lose passion for your, what is supposed to be your purpose. And so, yeah, that's the one of the things that I like to see in a musician is their, yeah, I mean, them learning the music, also their energy, their vibe. I'm an energy person. So what kind of energy are you bringing to the stage? What kind of energy are you bringing to this group? Also professionalism. But yeah, I mean, just the importance of also studying music and, knowing a variety of different genres and music as well. That's important for me.
Well, I tell you, you preach it to the whole choir. You got a whole choir section over here that you talk to. We have a lot of musician listeners, and you know, because they want advice and all that, and I'll give it to them because I'm like, you got to do work, and it's not the people, they won't hand out. It's a whole thing with musicians. I'm telling you from the musician perspective. Some of them are egotistical, and they feed off of that and want just the attention on it because they think it's a solo show when they're supposed to be
that
working
too.
With somebody. And it's like, that's not what, it's not a 20-minute shed session, sir. You need to learn music. But it's a lot, it's, you know, it's a whole thing. I got with church music, it's most of church musicians that transition to doing professional gigs, and it's like they take that same mindset. It's like, sir, it's two different venues, two different expectations, but you talking right. I could go all day on it. I have on this show, but I'm not going to do this show. But we're going to let them breathe. We're going to let the musicians breathe this show. I ain't going to go too hard on them, but we got to call it out. Listen, learn the music like
we
have
to.
I can't tell.
I was going to say, sometimes that's how I've grown, when people call me out on my shit. Because, you know, sometimes you're just doing things because you think that's the way that it's supposed to be done. But no, you need to call people out and tell them, like, no, that's not the way that it needs, that's not the way it's supposed to go down. And so,
how many guests have we had on, singers specifically, and they have said that's the bare minimum? We've had a Dean Howard on, and that's the music.
We've had a lot. A whole lot, actually. Yeah, and we keep talking about doing a musicians versus singer show. We need to get that going.
Okay.
Yes, unwritten, it's like an elephant in the room. It's a big elephant in the room with musicians and singers. We speak two different languages. We don't even use words to communicate. It's like A flat, huh? This part right here, like we humming it. Oh, okay. You want to do it three times? Singers, you want more in depth with us, you want us to express more, we're not doing that. It's like, what key we in?
Okay.
And that's how we communicate. And singers and musicians, we need to get on the same, I just want to get on the same page and want us to get this hostility out, because singers and musicians got a whole thing with each other. People learning the music, they go both ways with it. The singers that, you know, that don't know their part, and musicians that don't know their part. Yeah, it's a whole thing. But yeah, we're gonna get it out on the table one day. But I'm gonna throw it to my co-host.
When we all come together, we can make it very. I mean, it could be a magical thing. But it's just getting everybody on the same page.
But we don't talk. We never talk about it. We just keep it, you know, divided. You know.
Yes. The conversation, it's important to have. That's one of the things that, you know, for me was one of the themes, is about having honest and open conversations, because that's how we grow. That's how we learn. That's how we move forward. That's how we progress. And without it, we'll just remain stagnant.
You said it perfectly. And I'm going to throw it to my co-host right now, Mr. EB. You believe?
All right, EB.
Yeah. Okay. So listen, I'm going to be real with you. When Q-Lynn told me that we were going to have you on, I think a lot of people who know me know that I'm I'm old as shit. So my ears are often stuck in the 70s and the 80s as far as R&B goes.
Okay.
But when I went to your Spotify and I saw that you had the artist playlist, and I saw one that had like Marvin Gaye, Al Green, Betty Swan, Delegation, yeah. Rose Royce, mm-hmm. and Roberta Flack, all some of my favorites. And then I've seen another one with like Mary J. Blige, Leon Bridges, Jill Scott, Amy Winehouse. I'm like, okay, the icing on the cake was when I saw you had a gospel one. So
I
would like to say that as someone who is often stuck in the past and who does not realize that every musician that came out after like 2000 is not a terrible musician, I want to thank you for that. And I was able to dig into some of your music and discover, like, your music has such, I think it's very reflective of where you're from. And I don't know much about Nova Scotia and much about Canada at all, but what I, from what I do know, you guys have, number one, a very solid black population. And you also have this Caribbean influence. And I heard both of those things. I think I heard, I forget what song it was, it was Jump Off, and I was like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, okay, okay. And then, of course, I heard Blood Red Roses, and I heard the African influence. And then, I mean, when I heard Me For You, it was like, I mean, Me For Me, I'm sorry, it was like, okay, I like this guy. Then I heard the acoustic version, and I was like, I want more of it.
Okay.
So I'm going to go back just a little bit.
Okay.
So it's been, I think, 11 years, right, since your last album?
Yeah, 2009, June 9th, 2009.
Yeah. So this is my question, because it's a question that I've wondered about. When your first two albums dropped, social media was not what it was right now. Like, the record industry was not what it is right now. So how different is it trying to release and promote an album now versus then when, you know, I think Facebook was the only big thing around, maybe MySpace, but how different is it trying to promote the album?
Yeah, I mean, it's really different nowadays, I mean, than what I was used to when I released my two albums, 'cause there wasn't, you know, social media really wasn't a thing. And, you know, sometimes I feel like, sometimes nowadays we get lost in the music. So sometimes it's not necessarily about the music, but it's about the branding. It's about, you know, the gimmick of the artist. And, and so it was just trying to maneuver myself about and trying to figure out how this whole industry works, this new industry with the streaming and just trying to market and promote my album. Sometimes I feel like a fish out of water. I'm just like, I don't even know. But, I mean, it's just like this. I have a passion for music. Like, this is a gift that was given to me, and so I need to do this. But I'm just trying to adjust. I'm just trying to, you know, sort of collect my bearings. But it's been challenging. And I'm an independent artist. And I stepped away from music for 11 years. It's like I said, I've had some challenging times, but, I'm adjusting. And I'm reading and I'm doing some research and, you know, I'm doing all that. So that's where I'm kind of at.
Okay. No, I get that 100%. I always wonder, especially for artists who have released albums, you know, during pre-social media times and trying to do it now, that adjustment, because social media also demands a certain vulnerability from you, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, they really just want to be all up in your business, to be 100% honest with you. And
I'm not that type of person. Like, I mean, I just had to, you know, I didn't do social media for, you know, I just started doing social media, you know, when I was getting ready to, you know, record my album. People were like, well, yeah, I mean, you need to be on social media. You need to be posting. And I'm just like, it doesn't feel authentic to me. I mean, it's gotten to a point where it feels more authentic. And just trying to find, you know, what works for me, what doesn't, but also not trying to follow the crowd, just trying to fit in where, okay, yeah, this feels good for me. But, you know, I'm kind of a private person. I'm private, but I'm not. But It's just like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not about putting my business out all out there. But, yeah, you know, I think it's a good way for people to connect, though, and for people to get to know you and for you to get to know people. So I'm grateful for that aspect of it. But it's less overwhelming for me than it was when I kind of first came back maybe a year or two ago.
Right. So
like I said, I wasn't posting at all.
To adjust.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, speaking of authenticity, there's this quote by you that I am in love with, and I'm going to read it. It says, authenticity is power, and having that same power has allowed me to really start living and watching the beauty of life unfold. And you were saying that in regards to this next project. What can we expect to hear on Bleed My Truth that we did not hear from your previous projects?
On Bleed My Truth, it's my most authentic and raw and vulnerable project to date. You know, so many sweat and so much tears have gone into creating this album, you know, even up to today. You know, I'm constantly, you know, feeling emotional or being emotional and shedding tears because there's so much that has gone into the making of this album. And it's just, you know, I reflect on a lot of my past and just trying to get back to the core of who I am as an individual. Just this album, it's a very eclectic album as well. That is different than my two previous albums. And I dive just deeper. It's very genuine in terms of the songwriting itself as well. I'm very proud of it. I'm just proud of the journey that I've taken to get to this place. And, that's where I'm at.
All right, I can relate to a lot of what you say that concerns, you know, sexuality and the journey in not necessarily finding yourself, but just discovering who you are and learning more about you. Because mm-hmm. in the process, I think we learn more about the world around us and how we were informed by mm-hmm. our environments. For you, when you took your hiatus, when you went on hiatus and, you started on that journey, was there anything that you promised yourself? Like, I know for me, I often will tell myself or promise myself, that I'll stay true to certain aspects of myself no matter what situation that I end up in.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything like that for you during that process?
Yeah, I mean, you know, since I was younger, you know, I just always wanted to tap into the authentic person, the authentic being. And, you know, over the course of time, you know, I was living, you know, based on other people's terms and what people wanted me to be. And I wasn't always showing up as myself. I wasn't being, you know, because I was so focused on trying to fit in people's boxes. And now having gotten to a point where I feel like so liberated, like I'm so blessed by that feeling of, you know, not fitting into a box and understanding that if I feel this way today, it's okay that I feel this way today. If tomorrow I feel different, it's fine because that's how I feel. And just being present and being in the moment and, I mean, it has even strengthened a lot of my relationships with, you know, friends as well. Mm-hmm. You know, just tapping into just honesty and just showing up and having conversations. And it's just, I mean, I guess it's just, it's a beautiful thing to be out of the box. Like, it feels so liberating for me, you know, even just being able to do interviews. I mean, before I used to hate doing interviews. Now I get excited to do interviews. You know, there's still a nervousness there's still that nervousness too, but it's just, you know, I'm showing up as myself, you know, whether you don't like me, whether you disagree with, you know, how I live, it's fine because I'm showing up as myself and I can be myself. And it's that authentic part of me. And I think we all aspire to be our authentic selves. And at the same time, I feel like a lot of us are very similar. A lot of us feel, you know, very isolated and feel very alone. But when you begin to have honest and deep, non-surface conversations, you see that, you know, you just see the beauty of life just kind of flourish. And that's where I'm at. And that's the energy that I want to give out. Those are the people that I want around me because, yeah, I mean, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I think embracing, who we are, there's like this certain sense of freedom that comes with that because we no longer have to conform to anyone else's expectations of what we should be or how we should act or, you know, any of that. And then it just becomes about, it becomes about that vulnerability, that sincerity in the music, especially for an artist. I think, like for me, I came out at a very young age and, one of the things that my dad has always instilled in me is that, you know, your sexuality is not the totality of who you are. I mean,
amen.
I don't think a lot of times we are allowed to exist in, you know, on different spectrums or in or outside of boxes because, you know, they put people into, and not just the industry, but just regular everyday life. You know, we're put into boxes and how we should act, how we should talk, how we should sing, you know, what we should look like, you know, who we should do anything for. So I, hearing you, you know, finally speak power to your truth, I mean, it's empowering for me, yes, but I'm just thinking of people who have not yet found that power and who can, you know, who you're helping to find that with just your courage and just, you know, speaking and living that authentic truth. So I do have to say thank you for that because I know that there are a lot of people. I have friends right now who are who are music artists and they have not yet found that. And I, in personal conversations, just I know how hard it is for them to have to, I guess I'm going to say, quote unquote, pretend to be something they're not. Even earlier when you were talking about not enjoying interviews, like I have friends who hate it because you never know what questions you're going to get asked. You never know how to respond. You don't want to say too much, but yet you don't want to come off as vapid and you want to feel comfortable. You want to be allowed to be your authentic self and connect with the audience because that's who your music will ultimately have to connect with.
And
I'm going to
switch
gears
a
little bit.
It also stunts your creativity. Like I've realized through me just being expressive with who I am, that, you know, I'm more creative. I get excited to create with different people. Whereas before you keep those walls up, you know, you're more protective of working with certain people because you're like, well, you don't want them to know that part of you. And like you said, you know, your sexuality is not the totality of who you are. But I didn't realize that until I actually was able to embrace who I am, that, oh, wow, I'm just not that. You know, I'm so much more than that. But when I was struggling, you know, to me, I was just that because I felt like that's what people are only going to see me as. But no, I am so much more than my sexuality.
You're so much more. And not only do you owe it to yourself to admit that you are so much more, but you owe it to the world to show them that you are so much more, and that does not define who you are. You know, it's an aspect of you, yes, and you have to speak truth to that, but that is not, you know, I think for, especially, and I can only speak for me as a black gay man, I think there have been times in life where I was ready to completely, you know, my blackness defines me. My manhood defines me. But for a while, my homosexuality, it was like, well, I don't want, and that's a stigma. Like, I don't want that to have to define me. And I think with growth, you realize that none of those things actually define you, but it's a package deal. And, you know, you're an individual just like I'm an individual, just like Q Lynn is an individual. Like, we, you know, none of these things should define us, and we should be allowed to live outside of, think outside of, and exist outside of these boxes that society will try to put us in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to switch gears for a little bit, and maybe it's a bit connected. With
all right,
looking at your playlist, especially your gospel playlist on Spotify, and hearing a bit of your background and the church, what was it that made you decide to become a quote unquote R&B singer as opposed to a gospel singer?
I just don't believe that's my destiny to be a gospel artist. I believe that I'm supposed to reach people outside of the church and give them that experience that we sort of feel in the church. And I've seen it, you know, I've performed at, you know, secular events or just, you know, non-gospel events. And people, you know, they'll say, oh my goodness, like I cried, or they felt a certain emotion. And it's like you associate that with, you know, when I used to perform at church. And so hearing people say that, I mean, it's inspiration for me, because it's just like, I feel like people need to feel that, people need to experience that. And so I just felt like, you know, my lane is not specifically for the church. It's outside of the church for me.
Okay. I think it's almost to me like disco, in the way that disco was formed and the way that disco became. It's that, these singers and these people were able to reach certain people in nightclubs or at a disco in the same way that they were being reached and fed, you know, in a church or any religious house. It's that feeling of love and freedom and ascending to something higher or hoping for something more, that you do. When you started recording the album, what is your creative process, I guess? Are you an artist that you write the lyrics first, or do you need, you know, production and music first, or do you just think about the overall concept of the album? Was it something that you thought about, like, you know, this album is going to be me, I'm going to be authentically Gary? Is that the process for you?
Well, how I kind of went into this album was, I had an idea of kind of certain things or certain feels, I should say, not necessarily the lyrical content, but certain feels of how I wanted each song to feel. But I also wanted to go into the creative process, because I worked with a hip hop artist who's a cousin of mine. He was a part of the creative team and the producer, and then a bassist and a guitarist. So there was four of us, and I also wanted to use the energy of the space and all of us, just being in the room, to kind of just create a vibe, but based on kind of what I had envisioned this album to be. And so we would just meet up, vibe it out. I would give the producer kind of an idea of how I wanted the feel of each song to be. And then we would kind of do almost like a jam session. Sometimes I would go in the booth and I would just kind of freestyle or sing. And then we would kind of create around that, or we would just kind of, you know, maybe if the producer had an idea, he would, you know, just kind of bring the idea. And then, you know, I would go in and record on that. And then me and the songwriter, we would write together. So it was more so that, but, no, it wasn't like I came with the lyrics. It was more so I had an idea. But let's just kind of let it happen authentically. And with this album, everything, even in terms of, you know, people that I've worked with, even the videos and everything that I've done, everything just kind of happened really organically. And so I just wanted everything to be that. I didn't want it to feel forced. I wanted to feel like this literally was supposed to happen. And that's how this creative process has been from the very beginning.
Was that your last question, Heath?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. We have a game on the show.
All right, wait.
You got another question?
Okay. Dude, I have one. I'm so sorry. And this is my final question. I think day to day, what I do professionally outside of the show is for almost 20 years I've been working in the music industry, you know, and on the live event side of things. How, in what ways will you, you know, COVID kind of fucked everything up, but in what ways will you promote this album? Do you plan on doing maybe like a virtual concert series? I guess that you can't really tour it right now, but how are you going to get the word out about the album?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love performing. I miss that aspect of performing, and kind of in Toronto right now, there's a lot of restrictions in terms of how many people you can have in one space. You know, I really like that full band feel, but I also like the acoustic vibe as well. So I'm just thinking of, you know, different performances that I can do. You know, it'll be like acoustic style, some full band things is what I also want to do as well. But just, yeah, I mean, just thinking of creative things that I can do. But it'll be like, you know, live videos, virtual shows. I mean, I really miss performing live outside of the virtual shows. I'm not really a fan of the virtual shows.
No, yeah, I feel you.
But I'm just I have to exist in this world and do, yeah. I mean, I guess it's really doing this. I hate to say it, but yeah, I mean, I guess the virtual stuff, acoustically full band.
Yeah, no,
just to make it work. But I feel like it loses that connect. Like, you don't get that same connection.
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
You're absolutely right. I was tweeting about it. I tweet about it often, actually. But it's my life before was just concerts, and it's that live experience of connecting with an artist, and that artist is connecting with, you know, the crowd, no matter how big or small. Yeah. I like the intimate, the smaller venues, I think about a lot of artists. There are two groups. There are the legacy artists, I like to call them, so older artists who now that's how they make their living. That's what they do, is they tour. That's their business. Like, they're now being shut out. And then I think about younger independent artists who don't have that same opportunity now because of COVID. And a lot of the venues that I've worked for and consulted with were smaller venues who gave the opportunity to smaller independent artists so they can build a fan base, or, you know, so they can discover new territory. And it's like, that's not allowed at the current time and the current climate. So one thing that my company was doing, and we actually started last year before we even knew about COVID, and I was against it at the time, was we were trying to push virtual events and selling virtual events and doing things virtually, and then it became a reality. And I won't say that I'm against it, but it doesn't have that same flair for me.
Yeah.
I know for a lot of people, they love it, and it works for a lot of people. So I think it's great that it does. But I know for me, I'm just one of those people where if I have to watch you on my phone or on my computer or on my TV, I don't get that same connection. But
no,
I'm glad to hear that you are at least keeping your options open and that you're going to promote it. Because while I have not heard the full album yet, I think you've struck gold in a way, and I think what you have is something special, and the world deserves to hear it. But I want you to be able to reach, you know, as many people as possible, because my thing is the people that have the most amazing gifts are often the people that don't get the same amount of exposure or the right exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely want you to do that, because I want you to reach all the heights that you can.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I received that. And I do, too.
We have a game that we play on the show. It's called the What's Wrong With You game.
Okay.
kind of self-explanatory. It's a lot to this game. A little pressure, a little bit. Just explain the rules.
Pressure.
Just explain the rules a little bit. It's fine. As long as you... Basically, the rules of the game is you got to pick what I pick. It's an either-or game. It's basically artist, not artist comparison, and just who do you listen to more of on your playlist? And these artists that are a part of this, it's, you know, some of them are songwriters, some of them producers, so you can include that. If you know the catalog, you can include that work in as well. Just have to specify that, because some of the guests say I don't specify enough. So specify, you can add it in there. But
all right, so before you start, so Gary, you know, I feel like you and I have a connection right now. You know, we're two strong black men.
Don't mess up the shit. No, we got a connection with me, okay?
Right, don't
mess up.
I just want you.
Is that part of the game? Are
you talking right? Because he wants you to pick a certain kind of artist when we get to it. And I don't want him to intercede on this. That's why I'm cutting it off right now.
Because I want Gary to win, because I think he deserves to win.
Okay. Let's get to it.
So just pick what you think I would pick, Gary. That's basically what I'm saying.
No, that's not what the rules is not based on, Evie. It's what it's my taste.
Okay.
Just pick what I pick, okay? Don't listen to anything he just said. But we'll get to the first one. The first one is Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass.
Oh, I would say, and I got to choose who I would pick.
Who do you listen to more on your playlist? Marvin Gaye.
Oh, definitely. It would definitely Marvin Gaye.
Talking right. The next one is The Whispers or the OJs?
The OJs.
Talking right. The next one, Prince or Rick James?
Prince.
You talking right. See, those are all trick questions. Either way, you would have went with any of them. You would have got it right, because I make up the rules as I go. And so that's part of the rules. I make them up. So either way, you would have went with it. You would have got it right. And so, yeah, you're doing good. And now we at the part of the game to where you got to get all these right. And take it with
wrong. Those ones,
if you get them wrong, you got to pick what I pick. If you don't pick what I pick, you know, you get what's wrong with you. So, I take everybody on the roller coaster ride, and then here's the drop right here.
Let's go.
Now we get to the real side. Okay.
Okay.
This is Michael Jackson specific. Off the Wall or Thriller?
My goodness. I'm going to say Off the Wall.
You talking right. You didn't get a word out with your name. You talking all the way right on that. Okay.
Hey.
Okay. All right, I'm bracing myself for this next one. I don't know. I feel like I know where you're going.
I feel like he got it right. He got it right.
I feel like I know where he's going.
Oh, the pressure. Too much pressure.
Okay.
Now.
All right. We're going to go with Miss Patty, or you're going to go with Miss Patty or Miss Aretha.
Oh, I would have to say Miss Aretha.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
No.
That's right. No, Q-Lin.
You
said Aretha.
I need more contemplation with this pick.
Wow.
And so in order for me to get clarity on this pick, I need you to name three Aretha songs in 20 seconds. Go ahead. The timer started. Name three Aretha songs.
Ain't no way. You make me feel like a natural woman, and what's the other one? Why can't I not think of another song? Aretha, come on. Terrible.
Four.
Ain't no way. There's my two. Amazing Grace, but that's not her.
Amazing Grace.
I mean, that counts.
Was that Grace not all time for you not getting it?
He's correct.
I mean,
the pressure. When you put pressure on people.
Listen, if it's in your playlist, I need to know if it's there. You said you've got
more pressure on him.
And Patty. I just need to know the top three.
He named three.
You know what? You usually get a what's wrong with you if you don't pick what I pick. But since you named three songs, you're not going to get a what's wrong with you. But you are going to get a negative 17 points. You're definitely going to get that. Because you're supposed to pick what
negative
I pick.
Negative
17. Yes. Negative 17. Listen, there's bonus points along the way. You can get that as well. But just know.
Okay.
You know, you don't get a what's wrong with you, but you get negative 17. That's what I got to get. You're talking right on that.
One of them I didn't go with because you would have chose Patty.
Yes, Patty. Listen,
he would have chosen Patty, come on.
I would have chosen Patty.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, really?
Sorry. No, okay.
Yeah, no, we have Aretha over here, baby. Come on.
Yeah, definitely.
Queen of Soul.
Yeah,
Aretha's good for vinyls, you know, nice at the house, you know, got a couple, you know, when I used to do corporate gigs, you know, fun party music sometimes, you know, get respect, get Caucasian people up on their feet, you
know. That's right, respect.
And that's the go-to one. When you talk about them hits, though, the jams, the concert players. Aretha, you got to have, you got to have some kind of liquor experience when you listen to Aretha. Like, I don't need to have that all the time. You know, she got a few joints to where it's up and going, where, you know, good, you know, jump to it, you know.
Come on, do right, woman.
Come on, she got so many tunes. Yeah.
I'm not denying the hit, but I'm just saying, let's talk about who we're going to first on the playlist for a good time.
And Patty would be far down on my list. She would be fried down on my list.
That's right. That's right, guess.
Yeah.
Oh, hilarious.
Oh, I love
that's
you.
Funny. Because she is.
There are so many artists. Honestly, that would be so before Patty. I mean, God love her, but
great voice, beautiful
yeah,
band,
and personality.
It don't sound like I'm going. It don't sound confusing, but she ain't in my top either. Like she's way down she's on my list.
No, stop.
I'm talking about playlist. This is why. I'm just unbiased when it comes to, because it ain't got to do with favorites, none of that. You know, because when we talk about more albums, I listen to way more Aretha albums than Patty. That's fact.
That's because she got way more, though.
But
yeah.
I'm making a point. I'm trying to make a logical point of what people listen to. And so,
all right, let's finish this game. Let's finish this game, because I feel like we're batting 100 right now.
Yeah, to you.
He on it.
He's 97 out of what?
I'm a little nervous. You know why I'm nervous.
So I don't know what 30 minus 100 is.
I'm a little nervous because we got some questions coming up, and one of them I don't know if you're going to get right, and I'm nervous. But so far, you're doing great.
He's doing great.
You ain't got no faith in me at all, do you?
I mean, listen, I had some. We're going to see.
Okay.
The next one is, we're going to go with, are you picking Babyface or Brian McKnight?
Oh, I would have to say, I mean, I would say Babyface.
You stalk him!
That's right.
Wait! You stalk him all the way right!
And then
you think
like,
it would be obvious, but it's not obvious.
Too, like,
yes!
I mean,
that's right. Come on.
I mean, come on. How could we not say Babyface?
Yes. The hit, yes. They don't stop. Okay, the verse is battle-proof, but you talking right on that. You didn't get a what's wrong with you on that.
And I know I wouldn't get one on that one, because I would be like, what's wrong with you?
The next one is a bonus, so take it either way you want to. But this is where, you know, we both, me and EB are bracing ourselves, because we never know where the guests don't go with this
we
one.
Don't.
But
it's
a bonus, just throwing it out here. Okay. Mary J. Blige or Faith Evans?
Come on, Gary. Come on. Give me what I need.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, Mary J. or Faith. I mean, I love me some Faith. I really love me some Faith and her vocals. Mm-hmm. Like,
mm-hmm.
Keep going.
Reroute. I would have to say because when I went to see Mary J. Live, I
that's
was
right.
like, oh, okay, I didn't.
That's right.
Oh, I didn't expect all this from you.
Hey, okay. Come on here.
I thought we were talking about Mary J. I'm gonna have to say
that's
Mary
right,
J.
Gary. I love
no.
you so much.
Okay.
Oh my God, this is great.
What? Okay, whose debut album are you going with? No, I need specificity. What debut album are you going with?
For Mary?
Mary or Faith Evans, whose debut album are you going with?
I would say which release.
Real
Love. No, yeah, I mean, I would definitely, it would be Mary.
Okay.
It would be Mary. I mean, I love me some Faith, like, vocally, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, vocally,
vocally, you pick his Faith.
No, no,
over
he
Mary.
Said he loves Faith vocally, but he didn't
no,
say
no, I need to hear playing what he said and clarify.
I'm saying, well,
you
like,
say,
vocally, like, if we're just talking vocals, like, and they had to sing the same songs, of course I would go with Faith.
Okay, that's all I need right there.
I don't know about that.
And I'm determined.
If I had a catalog and vibes, I would have to say Mary.
That's
like,
right, Mary J.
You said the right one. You said vocally.
No,
like
but
you get bonus
let's
points.
Go back.
The question was,
who does he have more of on his playlist, correct?
No, I told you I make up the rules as I go. I said vocal. I'm turning in the wind by vocals. I told you I make up the rules as I go. That is a rule that I just made up. I'm determining the wind by vocals.
Let's pause vocals. Really quick because I have a question. Now, Gary, you said when you went to see Mary, you got so much more than you bargained for, than you thought you were going to get, correct?
Yeah, I mean, because I just didn't think, like, vocally, I was just like, okay, what is Mary going to give us?
And she gave you what you needed.
She did, and you know what? And she was on stage, like, her band was hidden. She was on stage by herself.
Come on.
Like, this was in New Orleans for the Apple Festival.
No bells and gimmicks, nothing.
And she blew
just
me,
Mary.
Even vocally, she sounded great.
Yeah.
And her hits, I was just like, man, you're singing all your hits right off the bat. And I'm just like,
he does.
Oh, my goodness. But it was hits after hit after hit after hit. I was just like, Mary, I was like, Mary, you have a lot of hits.
You saw her at the Essence Fest, right?
Yeah, it was the 20th anniversary.
Now, right, exactly. Now, where have you seen Faith Evans? On what stage have you seen Faith Evans?
Oh, I've seen her on TV.
That's it, because that's all she's good for, where they can fix the vocals. So, yeah, he's right.
What?
Mary wins, and we're going to conclude that there's nothing wrong with him.
No. We're not fixing to have you. Listen,
but I
we're
mean,
Faith is the live performance.
We both do love Faith, but Q-Lin is, just like Q-Lin is Team Patty, and I'm Team Aretha, she is Team Faith, and I am Team Mary. In that way.
Let me tell you something. I've taken all the information that EV said, you know, and what Brother Gary has said. And, you know, I've been to many of Mary J. Blige's kind of been out of this world. Harmony background, out of this world. I've been to more than four shows. It's been probably six, seven over the past 8 years
20.
I've been to Mary's show. But at the end of the day, Brother Gary said he picks Faith vocally over Mary, so that's my determined that there's nothing wrong with Mr. Gary Bills. Ain't nothing wrong with him, okay? Brother Gary, based upon my rules, not anybody else's, just mine alone, and that's all that matters on this show. As long as you talking right with me, let me put emphasis on that. Then you talking right. You won the game. Okay.
I'm talking right?
You talking all the way right.
You
that's the country.
Right,
I'm from Oklahoma. We talk country. So that's what that is. We just call it talking right. When you just all the way, you know, telling the truth. And
So what do I win? $2,500 American dollars?
Yes, I will cash up you.
That means
I don't know what the...
You guys' cash is worth a whole lot over here, so...
Right. I don't know what the equivalent is of what Canadian beer you drink. I don't know what kind of Canadian beer y'all could get for $3, but I could get you $3.75.
No, we don't want beer, baby. We want whiskey. Come on.
$3.75?
Canadian beer for $3.75.
You know,
that's what I'm going
to
do.
I went to the liquor store and bought me a whiskey yesterday.
I knew that because you and I are on the same wave.
It's right there. I'm looking to my right, and it's right there. Yeah.
Come on, Tweet. He said he looked so good to the land.
Hilarious.
I love it.
Listen.
I love it.
There goes my shirt. After a few drinks, there goes my shirt.
See, that's what happens. That's what happens.
Mr. Gary Dills, it has been such a fun time.
It's been a pleasure.
I just want to say this a little bit, because it's only rare that I say this about certain singers, because as a music journalist as well, I try to give as honest a critique as I can when it comes to soul music, but just music in general, because I feel like all that music is tied together. They all pull from each other in terms of the influences and whatnot. It all overlaps, so it all pulls from each other in terms of the constant growth of R&B and jazz, blues, gospel, country, all the same stuff. They all pull from each other. And I would say it's only few that really define who they are musically. And as you have made it clear in certain records that you've put out, what is just the sign of music liberation, and it's only a few that hold that. Certain artists hold that title, music liberation, like Annie Lennox, Sylvester, Little Richard, Scarface, you know, Old Dirty Bastards, all those different eclectic visual arts that they, even Busta Rhymes, Missy Elliott, if we get to that, that created music, Prince as well, those artists that were made it a message to make their music musically liberating, and it just exudes effortlessly, like those artists exude it effortlessly, like, you know, Rick James, like all that exudes music liberation to me, like it's not a gimmick, it's just effortless. And so when I hear your voice, and people say soulful, but I feel like soulful and soul is so overused, which it implicates it perfectly, you know, if I would define you, if we're using that term. But just to go outside that word, it's something about your voice. The first thing I thought of, because it was a word, it was specific, and it wasn't soul. And I was like, what is it? Because it was messing with me that I couldn't think of words. And then when I heard Me For Me, that's when it, like, popped in my head, pure. That's what came in my head. It was just a pureness. Your voice is endearing. It's, like I said, when I mentioned Whitney, the way she approached songs was like the Olympic medalist track runner. It's in stride. It's not, you know, struggle. It's just a clean stride. And I feel like the way you approach music is the same way. And I just feel like the way you tie it all together visually and vocally, it paints a clear picture of just that musical liberation. And I'll say I think you describing the hiatus, I call it in that time, because, you know, D'Angelo, you know, Maxwell, you know, he was gone for like 9 years, you know, D'Angelo about 15 years was gone, and they create these quality albums because that's their intention, to create a full album, you know, with the intention of to musically express themselves. And I feel like your time, I call it, you have to live to be liberated. You know what I mean?
Amen.
And I think, personally, when you were talking about religion a little bit, but I don't want to get on the whole spiel because I can do that, but I'm personally not tied to religion.
Neither am I.
I respect certain aspects of it because it honed my skills as a musician, and that time period was so innocent, and I was open to learn different sounds and musicians and you know, the whole conglomerate of creating with, you know, people in church. That experience was great to me. It's always going to be there. But I feel like traditions ruin liberation. You know what I mean?
Indeed so.
In terms of, I don't take in societal rules of how life is supposed to be in any aspect across the board. Whatever we're talking about, abortion, if we get political talking about abortion, the LGBT community, like any of that negative in that aspect, I don't mock with it, and I try to be as vocal, and I think in my liberation it taught me to be more vocal and standing up for my gay brothers and sisters and not, you know, allowing the straight community, if I come across, you know, a homophobic, to say what needs to be said and put them in their place because it's disrespectful and it shouldn't be tolerated to no degree, but it shouldn't be upon those, you know, being offended to have to defend themselves. It's like other people rally for them and be there for them, and I try to do that as best I can. But yeah, your church influence is there. I feel like it revealed what I think church just reveals what you don't want to be if you're liberated. And once you get a clear picture of what it is, It's like a, okay, I see it, but I don't want to be that. That's what I take in from church. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's why I haven't been there in years.
Mm. Right, and I'm not an idealist.
But I'm really truly grateful for the experience. I'm grateful for the foundation. But yes, you're speaking my language.
Yeah, and I'm not an idealist. I'm a realist. You know, mm-hmm. I see it for what it is, and I feel like idealism. If you live in it too long, then it will stomp your creativity because then you're basing upon other people's approval. You know, that's what idealism leans more towards than groupthink, and I'm totally against that. But it's like I said, your music is musically liberating, and just watching the video, the original version of Blood Red Roses, I see that. Like, I didn't need to read anything in terms of the liberation, because I can see it, like, people say the eyes are the window to the soul. Like, when you see the video, I look at it, and I'm like, he seems happy, like, genuinely happy. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never, like, usually in videos, it's like, okay, we got the model, we got this going on, it just seems like all props, everybody's props in the video. Nobody's having, like, fun, you know, sometimes, but... Yeah, I didn't get that from that video, and I'm like, it just your eyes were inviting. It just seemed like you were genuinely having fun. It was inspiring, and I just feel like you're just an all around multi-dimensional artist because it's rare for people to make a song that can be at a club, like or at a party or kickback, and then also show off the vocal ability. Like only few artists can be in that lane. You know what I mean? It's either you're good at this. I'm not really a ballad singer or a simple singer. You know what I mean? Nobody's all. But you have all that already, it just speaks to that time period that you took off was put to use. And I just want to say I'm anticipating Bleed My Truth. For those listening, it comes out tomorrow. Bleed My Truth worldwide on all digital platforms. I just want to say, Mr. Gary Bills, your intention on the music quality is seen. And it's appreciated. I just want to thank you for coming on the show. Like,
oh, my goodness.
I appreciate it.
It was an absolute pleasure being on the show with you guys. Like, as you were talking, I was like, I just love the two of you so much. I love your spirit. I love your energy. And you guys just feel like home to me. Like, you know, I feel like I've known you for quite some time. But I appreciate, you know, I appreciate that a whole lot. And so many times throughout the call when each of you were speaking, like I literally was getting goosebumps, just, you know, you talking about your individual selves. And, it was beautiful. So thank you very much for sharing.
It's not a problem at all. Make sure
get
the album tomorrow. It's called Bleed My Truth on all digital platforms. We are going to be playing another song, a single called Me For Me. You can find this show on soulsadness.com, and also it's on studiowbuzz.com. Right now it'll be uploaded after the show on the archive when you click on the page, and we will have this uploaded on soulsadness.com soon. But thank you so much, Mr. Gary Bills, for coming on the show. We appreciate it. And we're going to go out with the Me For Me. We're going to go to break real quick, and we're going to be back and get to the 6 minutes of rage. So, Will, if you're ready, we're going to get to it. Y'all check out Me For Me by Mr. Gary Bills.
Thank you.
I expose who I really am to you. I lay bare, naked in front of you. I let you teach me to be me through my insecurities. Wondering what more you need from me. If you take and I take and we take. If you do and I do, we do. If you love and I love, we love. One more do we need. How could you not take me for me? Give you my heart, give you my trust, give you my all, and you just gave it If I write my thoughts on a page for you, would you see me the same way you read me? Every time I think of you, reminiscing on our yesterdays, baby, I can't let you fade away. You take and I take and we take. If you do and I do, we do. If you love and I love, we love. One more do we need? How could you not take me for me? Why would you want to break free from me? Myself in a chair, I die for you. I take my soul straight to hell. I burn for you. I pull out all the hate in my head. I'm just crazy for you, baby. There is nothing, nothing I would not do. Oh, how could you not?
Mr.